The villains who abuse our monetary system get what's coming to them in the fifth novel in the critically acclaimed Lewis Morgan series, written by cartoonist, painter, and novelist Peter Steiner. Peter Steiner's most famous cartoon in The New Yorker is the now iconic On the Internet, No One Knows You're a Dog. His books include Le Crime, The Terrorists, L'Assassin, and The Resistance. The new Lewis Morgan thriller is The Capitalist, and we welcome Peter Steiner back to the roundtable this morning. Peter, always great to have you on the program. Thank you very much for coming back.
Wonderful to be here, Joe. Thank you for having me.
So give us a sense of what you wanted to do in bringing your character back and ultimately making this a series.
Well, it's a character that I've come to love, and in many ways he's as alive as anybody that I know. And the way to find out what he's up to is to write the next book. So that's kind of what got me going. I mean, this book has two motivations behind it. One is to keep Lewis Morgan alive. And the other is to sort of, in a gentle way, examine the capitalist system and how it functions and what it does to us, those who live in it.
So without giving too much away, and God knows I don't want to do that, but there's the good guy and there's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And in this case, Lewis, of course, is the good guy, which would make the financial people, that's probably the bad guy, right?
Yeah. I think, I mean, I hope it's more complicated than that. Lewis is very often operating.
It's very much more complicated
than that.
Outside
the law, and the bad guy turns out to be more complicated also. So, which is the way things are in life.
So tell us a little bit about how the story unfolds. Lewis Morgan, as we mentioned, is an ex-CIA operative and is in pursuit of John Larimer. Now,
St. John Larimer. Is it
St. John?
Yeah, that's the way the British pronounce it, and that's the way he pronounces it. It's spelled St.
John. Yeah. St. John.
Yeah.
So then you ask yourself, how does a character like Morgan get involved in this particular story?
And he didn't want to be involved in this particular story, but it somehow kept catching him up. And the woman that he's involved with, his lover, yeah, he lives in France and tries to lead a quiet life, but somehow his past or events intrude. And his lover had a brother in New York who was a money manager and becomes a victim of St. John Larimer and loses his life and takes his own life. I don't think that's giving too much away. And when he loses all the family money and the other money that he's been in charge of investing. So that angers Lewis. And Lewis is a person who cannot live with the thought of injustice. It's like an itch that has to be scratched. So that motivates him to somehow go after this guy. It's unlikely that he can do it in a kind of conventional legal way. So he dreams up an unconventional and slightly illegal way to do it. So that's kind of the backbone of the story. And he has lots of friends and acquaintances and even some enemies who help him in the pursuit of this St. John Larimer.
One of the things that I found fascinating about the book, and it's to your remark earlier about it being more complicated just than white hats and black hats, is that some of the victims themselves are the villains.
Yes. And, you know, a lot of this is based on stuff I read in the newspaper. A lot of it is made up, of course, but this book started being written not long after Bernie Madoff's shenanigans. And it was interesting to me how when the cheated came forward to try to get reimbursed for what their losses were, some of them tended to exaggerate what their losses were or to present their cases in a way that was to their advantage and perhaps to the disadvantage of others. So there's a lot of greed in this book coming from all directions.
When you look at that story, the Madoff story, it goes back quite a few years. So this book has been in you for a while.
Well, it's been in me, and it's been waiting to come out for a while, too. The publisher had it for about a year and a half before it came out. It took me about, once I got down to it, it took me about a year to write. But preparations and the sort of mulling things over and stewing took a little longer than that.
You are, you're of course also a cartoonist.
I am.
So is that the day job and this is the sideline, or this is the day job and that's...
They're all sidelines now. I'm also a painter, and what I tend to do is work on one until I kind of find myself spinning my wheels or getting bored, and then I move to the next. In the past, I've written a novel, and then I've gone... after the novel is done, gone back to painting. There's something about the contrast between the visual and the verbal that really is powerful for me. As I'm painting, I find myself thinking, fantasizing little stories, and you know, some of them sort of take root and grow in my mind. And then when I'm done painting, when I feel like I've done what I want to do for the moment, I have this little storehouse of stories that I start messing with, and so then I'm a writer. And then while I'm writing, there's a lot of visual stuff in the books. I try to describe things in a kind of vivid way that makes you either want to be there or eat what's being described or whatever the case may be. And so the visual causes me to have kind of thoughts about painting. So I kind of go back and forth that way. And the cartooning is an outlet for my rage, you know, at the nonsense that goes in our society, particularly now during the election season and particularly this election season. So I have a blog that I do occasional cartoons in, and I just finished also a cartoon. They're called graphic novels, but I don't like that word. This is a kind of cartoon book called An Atheist in Heaven. And I don't know whether that will come out or how it'll come out, but I'd like to get it out.
but it's finished nonetheless.
It's finished, and I think what I'm going to do first is publish a limited edition art book version, you know, just at my own expense, maybe print 100 copies on really nice paper. And then I'll have something to show a publisher, if nothing else.
You were at a time regularly submitting to the New Yorker.
So. I was a New Yorker artist for about 20, 25 years, something like that.
And at some point you just said, I'm done with that?
I think so. It was kind of mutual. They said, yeah. I had the sense, they said, you know, we're done with you. and I was kind of done with that. The New Yorker magazine's cartoons have changed a lot in recent years. And I didn't feel that I understood anymore what worked for them and what didn't. So it meant, of course, that I was successful less and less of the time with my submissions, and that seemed like a good time to stop.
So I'm curious, is it in that change that you have felt that they are perhaps less likely to allow the rage that you have within those cartoons?
No, my cartoons for the New Yorker were always very gentle. The rage has to do with sort of political cartoons that would never have worked there.
Wouldn't
anyway.
Have made it, right.
Yeah. But the cartoons I do about life in general are still fairly gentle and subtle. And to me, the drawing was always extremely important. I loved doing the drawings, and the ideas were just a means, an excuse to do a nice drawing. And that's in the magazine now. The jokes have come to be more important, and very often, you know, I can look through a magazine. A lot of people tell me they look through the magazine, say they don't understand the cartoons. And I have to confess that's true of me, too, sometimes. They just don't, either they don't resonate with me in a particularly humorous way, or they make reference to cultural issues that I don't know anything about. Right. I'm a pop culture illiterate, pretty much. I don't follow pop culture, and a lot of allusions in the cartoons now are about pop culture.
It's an interesting transition, and one that I agree with. I understand what you're talking about as a subscriber and a regular reader of the cartoons. What I find interesting, though, is it isn't a change in leadership. The cartoon editor and the editor of the magazine are the same. So it seems as though it's, more of a mark toward marketing and to an audience.
I suspect that's part of it. I suspect that's part of it. I mean, they've always wanted to attract younger readers, and I never thought that would be a problem. I mean, I think if they let time pass, the younger readers would have come. But they, of course, didn't consult me.
It's fascinating to me because I've had several New Yorker cartoonists on the program over the years, and they all basically say the same thing, which is, well, they're great, but if not there, where else do you sell them?
Now there's really very little.
All of the places that used to do it, even Playboy and Saturday Evening Post and other magazines have pretty much given that up.
Yeah. When I started out, there were dozens of places, and people would make the rounds from one to the other and generally manage to unload a lot of their week's work. Mm. Now there's... And Playboy stopped using cartoons, right. So that was one of the last well-paying markets. And it never was an easy way to make a living, and now it's an impossible way to make a living.
So is being a novelist an easier way to make a living?
Well, no. I make bad career choices.
But you get to tell a story that you like to tell.
I love the writing. I was surprised. You know, I was 60 years old when I started writing novels, and I was just shocked at how much I loved doing it. You know, if I just did it and put it in a drawer, I would still do it. It's just so much fun for me. It's constructing the world you wish you lived in a way, and living in your imagination and just spinning out yarns. And I always feel smarter than I really am when I write a novel.
The character of Lewis Morgan then will go on.
As long as I can manage, yeah. Yeah, he's getting long in the tooth, but then so am I, so.
Well, you can manipulate that however you
want, right? Yeah, I somehow feel compelled time-wise to keep it true. I mean, I don't know why I feel like compulsion, because so much else of it is fantasy, but somehow I want it to be, I want him to get older. And so I could... And I've thought of this, writing something from his younger years.
Going back.
And I might do that. But in fact, the one, last one, The Resistance, was sort of that way. It happened earlier in his time in France. And I love writing about France, too. It sort of puts me there without my being there.
Do you get back, though?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going, in fact, in about 2 weeks. Yeah.
And do you look at those as... purely vacation trips, or is there some eye towards something that you would write about in the future?
They are mainly vacation trips, and I'm not thinking about finding something that I would write in the future, but very often something pops into my awareness that I think to myself, I can use that in the future. Or even if I don't think it then, when I start writing, I'll recall a moment. There's a moment in here in this novel where they have, I don't know if you remember, they have an argument about cheese and how cheese has to be sliced and served. That was something that actually happened. And when it happened, I just laughed a lot at it, like everybody in the book does. But later I thought, this is a good moment, and I'd like to put it in the book. It has nothing to do with the suspense, but it does have something to do with Lewis and his friends and who they are and the world they live in, as opposed to the world of high finance. So it seemed to be a useful moment.
Yes, it gives you the idea of the two cultures.
Right.
And the complexities, or lack thereof, yes. The name of the new novel is The Capitalist. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books. Peter Steiner, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with the new novel. Thank you very much for coming in, as always. It's
Thank
always
you,
a treat
Joe.
To see
I
you.
I enjoyed it. Nice to see you, too.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the new thriller is The Capitalist. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books from St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.